Welcome. I'm so glad everybody's here. Despite the hour and the day, I have no relationships to disclose. And see, Vanessa, I was kind of following up on, but you know now everything about Nebraska and about our school, so that will get me going right into it. And since I was born in the States, lived many years in Israel, and back to the States about 15 years now, moving from Baltimore to Omaha was a big deal. And I'm so glad that in 1 year you feel the same way I feel after 8 years now. I want us to get us all straight on IPE, interprofessional education, and I'm going to talk about two things, interprofessional education and service learning. The bottom line of my presentation is how do we teach public health? We do it. We take students out of the silos into the community to work together with other professions. And Hugh Barr stated this definition a long time ago. It was just kind of restated. Occasions when two or more professions learn with, from, and about each other to improve collaboration and quality of care. This is really widely accepted. And we talk about interprofessional. This is integration between professions. When we say multi-professional, this is a student-run clinic with when different students come in with different preceptors. They don't talk to each other, so they're parallel, and a lot of people are using the multidisciplinary. We have a lot of disciplines in public health. We have a lot of disciplines working within OBGYN, but it's still not interprofessional. So we're really looking at interprofessional. And the interprofessionalism, kind of hard word to say, really includes inclusive participation, collaboration-centered. There is individual and group interaction, and really to find and recognize the best of each other. And the group creativity, you know, we call it breaking loose. So together we can do so much more than by each other. Not to even start to describe the financial burdens now, the population burdens that we have to address as clinicians, and the interdependence is really, really growing very, very rapidly. There's shared leadership, decision, ownership, power. Sharing power is not a given thing. Those of you who are in College of Medicine know that medicine is the hardest partner to get to share power, and it has to be on the table. And then with all of that, including critical thinking, critical reflection on what is happening and facilitating transformational learning. Because if we don't do that, everything becomes very superficial. So I like to use this model, the cone in the box, if you've seen it before. There's more than one truth. You know, for B, this is the triangle, of course, and for A, it's a circle. It is, really. So how do we use this model to really help us recognize that our perspective is just a partial perspective of the bigger picture. And then to really develop strategies to, yes, hold on our perspective and our thoughts, and at the same time recognize the value of someone else. So this is, I think, a very powerful model when you display it to students and kind of continue some kind of a discussion about it. So where do we see interprofessional practice or interprofessional education application? In all of these, everywhere. You know, we started at UNMC as grassroots activity in 2004. We said, let's try an interprofessional day. Let's bring students from different professions for half a day to do some kind of activity together. Learn who is around the table. What are your strengths? What brought you to school? What hoops did you have to get into College of Nursing, College of Medicine, Public Health? And the feedback we got was outstanding. Students just said, boy, this should be an ongoing activity. So over the years now, in 2011, we opened the year with 500 freshman students, medicine, nursing, public health, allied health, pharmacy. This was their orientation, interprofessional day. So it kind of sends a message to students, we're here working in collaboration. This is the first thing you're doing as students in this campus, is getting together to learn with, from, and about each other. And our next interprofessional day is going to be in February, so we instituted twice a year interprofessional days, and we created now a formal curriculum committee, interprofessional education curriculum committee, where we have people from all the leaderships of the different colleges representative on the committee. And we're creating this inventory of interprofessional opportunities where students will sign up and they will have to graduate with X amount of IPE credits. We're still making it up, so work in progress. Now, service learning is yet another pedagogy. How many of you are involved or engaged in somehow in service learning? Okay, many of you, and that's great. So really what we wanna, this is where the public health piece comes in. We want students to engage with community in community-identified needs and projects while addressing their learning objectives. And there are many, many benefits and many emphasis that we put in. This is applying learning to real-life situation, not simulation. We don't bring the simulation to campus. We take students outside using structured reflection, critical thinking development, developing awareness and sense of caring for others, using community partners as co-teacher. And I said using, but it's actually we're building the programs together. So community partners see themselves such as co-teachers, and we do too. We can't teach what the community partners can teach. These are ongoing community endeavors that I'm going to talk about. We call them Legacy Project, been going on for 4 years. And the students have a lot of opportunity to develop leadership skills, communication skills. They interact directly with CEOs, with project coordinators in the community to sustain and develop these programs. We created a student leadership forum, and for each program, there's a student board that runs the program and transitions every year. So this is a real hands-on student experience. How is service learning different from the other things that we do in medical campuses? This is really about the reciprocal nature of it. And we have to remind ourselves again and again to stay in collaboration, that this is about the service and about the learning. Just as much as our students are going out there to serve, they have to depict what they're learning, and we have to stay really on top of it. Here are some benefits, starting with the community. There are many of them. Benefits for students. Again, there are multiple benefits. And for many of our students, really also it's kind of a vehicle for their next career. Many of our students really transition and get interested in more public health training and pursuing an MPH. For the faculty, there are also some benefits. We instituted what we call community engagement scholarship, and I'm sure some of you are doing that. But with each of the projects, we encourage students to write it up, to publish, to put the paper out, put the abstract. Many of our students have been presenting conferences like this, and also preparing some non-traditional publications that really highlight the communities they're working with. And I'll give you examples in just a second. And then for the institution, I think for UNMC, you know, it really facilitates teaching, research, program development, very good connections in the community. You know, we all have on our badges this commitment to community service, and this is the face of it. But even for faculty, and we have now about 40 faculty engaged in this, this is new stuff. It's exciting. It's something that they think, oh, you know, I remember 20 years ago, this is what kind of I wanted to get connected to, and get connected to students in a very different way. So we run at least 4 different kinds of service learning. All our public health students have to do their capstone, 300 hours. It's a service learning / capstone experience in the community, and these are the MPH students. We have a lot of service learning integrated within courses, and I'll only talk about the Legacy Project that actually include 540 students from across campus. And then, of course, there are the trickling individual projects. So mainly for the capstones, we now have established relationships with about 75 organizations. around the country and around the state, and we, you know, we get sometimes emails and, hey, why aren't you working with us? And we're like, right on, what can we do? Let's sit together with students to develop yet another program. We started with 21 potential legacy projects, and we're now holding on 5 big ones. And as I said, we constantly get inquiries for others. These are the public health topics that we touch on, and you can see a whole lot of things that you can see in the general public health competencies, in the specific track related, in EPI or biostat or whatever it is. So it's really a whole range. As I said, these are the students that are involved with us. Now we have this year about 540 students from year 1 to 4 in the various programs. And you can see that we also invited in social work students, students from the School of Communication, information technology students, and neighboring campuses. I don't know how it is in your city, but in our city, there are 2 big medical schools and medical academic centers, and they don't talk to each other. So this is a big deal that students from the other campus got interested in some of the programs and now are collaborating, kind of bridging that gap that the faculty couldn't. These are the faculty that work with us from all the colleges. And what do we do for preparation, evaluation, assessment? You know, each of these presentations today could take the whole hour, so I'm just giving little tips and we can talk more about that. But everyone who goes to the community has to do some baseline modules just to raise awareness about really critical issues. Public Health 101, community engagement, cultural competency, and professionalism. Because these students go out and they pretty much are on their own. There's always supervision, but they show up and they really have to know what they're doing. We always have an orientation, an on-site orientation, so they get to know their environment. If it's the jail, they actually have to go through background checks and jail orientation. And we work with a professional storyteller to help level the playing field when they go to work with the refugees or with the homeless or with women affected by domestic violence, that there is some kind of appreciation for humanism and the quality, the humanistic qualities in all of us. And this is where the learning also starts. We use for reflection the what, so what, now what? Anyone familiar with that? It's a very powerful tool that we modified a little bit that is required, and they send it in electronically. And we use the CCPH surveys that are wonderful. They have 4 of them, student, faculty, community, and actually institution survey. And then I wanted to show you one more method that we started using, which is the Cloud World method. Anyone has used this before? This is a fascinating. It was a pilot. Through our work with the homeless, we call the project Finding a Voice. And part of the goal of the project was really to raise community awareness about homelessness and challenge some of the assumptions about people living in the shelter. So we held a community event. There were about 200 people showed up. It was the coldest night in Nebraska. I think we were in minus 12 Fahrenheit. And yet people showed up. We had food from the best restaurants, and we have lots of them. And we asked every person that walked through the door to tell us, what comes to your mind when you think homelessness? One word. And there were students at the door capturing it into this program. And this is what we got. Then we had a 2-hour presentation that really followed more appreciative inquiry pedagogy and highlighted on the panel, some of the homeless people talked about their experiences and transformation through art and through interaction with students and through interaction with the world. And as people walked out, took some dessert, they were stopped and asked one word that describes for you homelessness. And I didn't see it until I was finished cleaning up. And then the student said, look at this. And this is what came. Wow. Yes. So, you know, we have our evaluation hats and we think, well, what is the validity of this? What is the value of this? So we're starting to explore that. And I just want to show it to you and offer this as another way to maybe use some evaluation, something that you get right away and can have some indication. So here are some of the legacy projects. At the jail, unfortunately, Omaha is famous for being top of the nation in chlamydia and gonorrhea infections. And for 10 years, the number's been going up, despite all the efforts by the health department in Douglas County that Vanessa showed before. So we were called in by the deputy director and said, listen, we're the jail. We have the most high-risk population. Maybe we can do something about it. So over 20 meetings condensed in 2 months, we developed this project where students come in on Saturday mornings, provide education, then screening, Q&A kind of session with the inmates. We actually go into the mod, 60 people around come out to hear this, and then collect urine for screening of chlamydia and gonorrhea. A lot of interaction happens. Students go to the medical area, they process the lab, the urine, they send it out. Thursday night we come in to treat the inmates. It's all supervised, and the jail feels they're taking a huge part in a public health problem. Now, mind you, jails don't do that. Jails around the country don't screen, and they have the highest risk population going through. Prisons do. Everyone who comes to the prison gets an HIV, STD, and all of that. So the students are running this program. We've screened over 1,000 people so far, treated about 600, and now I've submitted a big grant to turn it into a sustainable program for the jail. The Empower Project is a project with the WCA, with women affected by domestic violence who are living in shelters who have basically no access to care because using their former insurance would kind of expose them to where they are. So students again put together a screening, education, and clinical program to address the needs of these women identified by the women. The other big program is Bridge to Care. We have 30,000 refugees in Omaha. Why Omaha? But the newly resettled refugees from 7 different parts of the world. And the students, again, are running a wonderful program that has to do a lot of education, resettlement, how do you even kind of function in your new home, and addressing health issues that were identified, again, by the refugee community. We just held a flu shot event last Saturday. 300 people showed up. And it's interesting that these refugees actually don't have access to flu shots in any other way. The state did end up contributing the vaccines, but not the whole operation around it. And then finding a voice that I described a little bit. So, I know we have to finish. These are some of the curricular components and the things that we think are really helping students through these programs. We get great feedback. Students keep on coming, even after most of our students are in their first and second year, but we have students coming back whenever they can, selecting the electives to come back and be more instrumental in them. And some of them actually find a job with these programs. So we have 2 students that now are working for the state on refugee health that were, one was the president of Bridge to Care, former president, and one was the co-president. So here are just quickly a few of the examples. The health disparities in minority health with North Omaha, and the student leadership forum, maybe just to say one thing about that. I think we rarely provide opportunities for students, especially in medicine, to develop leadership skills. And we feel that this program really allows them and puts them in a position to be leaders. So we are trying now slowly to incorporate some more skill building with that and have the students who are leading the various programs really learn from each other. They have been writing grants, they've been communicating with the press, they're doing advocacy, all these skills that we know that public health practitioners will have to do. So just a few. The other piece, and I'll just go really quickly on this one, the international service learning also incorporates students from the different professions, takes our students to a established partnership in India, the Asian Institute of Public Health, and again allows an opportunity to interact with other professions while doing public health. And we had a really hard time deciding about going internationally, but what we see is that students who go out come back with a much stronger commitment to public health and underserved care. So, thank you. One of our students who just came back.